interactive theater generally means performers mingling with the audience, breaking the fourth wall. But up at Kennesaw State University, the theater department is working on a different kind of interactivity. They're calling it IPOMOEA Project. And WABE's Mike Johns paid them a visit to check it out.
Generally, in the theater, if the lighting designer has done her job well, and this is the person who is responsible for letting the audience see what's going on stage, if they've done their job well, then the audience will probably never notice what they've done. But that is sort of the opposite of what's happening here. I'm looking at a whole bunch of lighting rigs and strings hanging from the ceiling, like the tentacles of some incandescent jellyfish or something. I'm here with Rebecca Makis.
I'm an associate professor of theater at Kennesaw State University.
And I'm also here with...
I'm Peter Torpe, and I'm a media experience artist working out of Boston.
So yeah, tell me what we're looking at. We're sitting in the Onyx Theater at Kennesaw State University. Tell me what we're looking at.
Well, you're looking at the first step in a large installation that we are planning for 2017 that is exploring the intersection between live performance and interactive technology.
So these are lighting rigs that are interactive?
Yes. Yeah. Right now, I can tell you that we call them the pallets. So they're shipping pallets with string stapled to them, and then they have LED lights hanging within the string. And there's little speakers embedded as well. And right now, if you go up to one of the pallets and wave your arm underneath, you will get a sound response.
Can we try that out?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, interestingly, what you hear in the background is some of the pallets, they still need to be calibrated. Mm-hmm. And so the sensors being triggered with the sound unintentionally. So that's what that's.
So that's where we're here. That's why we're hearing geese.
So this is our calibrated one.
Okay.
So you can give it a try. Yeah.
So I'm waving my arm underneath this thing. Yeah, and I got a lovely bit of bird song there.
Yeah. So there's 11 sounds that play, and they're all different. That same gesture of playing within the palette will also cause these LEDs to change.
Okay, so you'll get both a sound and a light reaction.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so what are you going for here? What was the idea that sparked the need to build these things?
Well, yeah, so we've been thinking about two things. One is, how do you reimagine what a performance space could be, and the relationship between performance creators and performers and the public with that space? So what we set out to create was a performance space that had its own identity, its own behaviors and characteristics, and then invited artists to come and create works in dialogue with this space. So it's kind of like a site-specific space, except that we're creating the site. The site has its own story with it, and we want our invited artists to figure out what stories they can tell with that space.
Yeah, because normally the way that a piece of theater works is, the way that the sound and lighting works is that everything's planned out and somebody calls cues, so when, you know, somebody crosses the stage at X time, then Y sound cue is called and that thing happens. And somebody actually physically pushes a button and it happens, but that's not what's going on here.
That's correct. In fact, it's kind of the opposite. So in a traditional performance, every single visual and oral detail is planned down to the tiniest little microsecond. but here, what we're more interested in is having the environment be triggered by presence, by movement. Ultimately, we want to expand that into other things so that in a lot of ways, the performer has more agency. But the creator also plays the space like an instrument, as opposed to building something that is specific yet static.
Okay, so describe to me where we are in the process, because we've got these really kind of beautiful lighting rigs, lighting and sound rigs. How many of them are there?
There are 10 in here, and this is the first component of 5 components. The way that we've thought about IPOMOEA is an urban garden, repurposing urban or man-made materials into a garden-like space, garden sort of as a metaphor. And the first component, which is what you see here, is what we call grass. And we've sort of taken this idea of tall grasses and inverted it to create an inviting space.
So you said the name of the project. Can I get you to repeat that?
IPOMOEA.
And where did that name come from?
Well, we were looking at different ideas of garden, and we found a name. I think it's a genus of flower. And it's night blooming flowers. They're called IPOMOEA, or that's their genus. Mm-hmm. I could be totally wrong about that, but that's that's the general botanical background for it.
Yeah, we'll have. I'm sure we'll have botanists writing in.
Yeah, probably. You know, I'm an artist, not a botanist, but we're looking for something that felt, that captured an action that felt the opposite of what you expect. And so we liked the idea of flowers that bloom at night as opposed to during the day. So it felt the opposite of, met the opposite of expectations. So in addition to our palettes, we also have a global response, which is why you see all these theater lights hanging around the space and they're flickering on and off. Because we have hooked up a Kinect to our theater board.
And a Kinect, this is like the video game system.
Right, the video game system.
That responds to movement.
That's correct. We've hooked it up so it's controlling the theater lights. So where you are in the space changes what the lights do.
As we're walking around the sort of black box theater space, the lights are sort of going on and off. And
they're divided, the stage is divided in half. So when you're over here and move around, the lights turn off, and when you go to the other side, the lights on that side will go off. And also an intensity of movement. So the more that we move, the more they'll stay off.
So an entire array of performers in this space could really change the way that it looks.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, one of the challenges of working when you're adapting technology that isn't actually made for this purpose, and also writing new software, is that you are constantly debugging. So it's like always one step forward, two steps back sort of process.
Eventually that should change in the other direction. But
yes.
This is a different model for performance control, really. It's that everything is connected and everything is responding in real time to what's happening within the space. So any bit of sensing and any piece of information can affect any part of the theatrical space.
What kinds of artists are you hoping to work with this model?
Well, for this workshop, we have a choreographer and a puppeteer coming in. So he's more than a puppeteer. It's Michael Haverty. Ivan Pulenkala is the choreographer. I asked both of them to bring in pieces that are in development and just sort of see what happens when they put these pieces that are in progress into this space. Do they learn anything about their work? Like, does something really resonate? Like, what happens?
As far as theatricality goes, what is the virtue of sort of the technical side of theater giving that control away and giving it to the performers?
I don't really see it as giving control away. I think it's just broadening the palette. It still takes a team of designers to create the world and to design the modes in which it can function. What are the things that performers can shape and interact with? And that's still the creative decision. It's not completely arbitrarily handing it over to the performers. I think it's just a different model that allows you to do certain things that might be too difficult. You mentioned earlier a stage manager queuing things in time, and a lighting designer having complete control. It's thinking about what are the types of things that you can't do that way, and not really thinking about it as adding technology to it, but creating an environment that can respond. And once you have that kind of environment, what new types of stories can you tell?
I think that one of the things that's really important about a space like this, that the audience have the chance to interact with it.
And this is this comes in at an interesting time in theater right now. I mean, with it's sort of the making the rounds in theater news that, you know, the fellow that clambered up on stage and on Broadway to try to plug his phone in, an audience member who was heckling a production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof out in Los Angeles. So this is actually inviting the audience to play within the space.
Yeah, and you know, it's actually intended to be, the installation itself is intended to be in more public spaces. So in 2017, we're have plans to do it at the Goat Farm in one of their spaces. And that's the full installation, all five pieces. And this September, we're doing it down on Broad Street as part of the Creative Loafing Best of Atlanta. And that's really going to be like just mostly just the public playing inside of it and doing things. That we may have some Goat Farm artists come in and like do something more specific, but basically the idea is just to get to play with it. So I'm really interested to see what the result is, because what's fascinating is to see how what people do with it, you know.
That was producer Mike John speaking to KSU Associate Theater Professor Rebecca Makas and Peter Torpe. You're listening to City Lights on WABE Atlanta. I'm Lois Reitzes.